Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. I'm Jackson Raymer alongside Devin Connell, Sam Graveline, and our one and only producer, Jacob Lovelace, who's making his second appearance on the show. We are part of the Stadium McGill Network and brought to you by Norris & Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You need to give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. Well, I don't think any of us predicted a 38-7 thrashing in Lexington with Kentucky coming out on top for the fourth time in 5 years. I thought it was as bad as it could get. I walk outside, realize my keys and wallet were stolen. Then I thought, it certainly can't get any worse than that, right? I see Lane Kiffin trolling the Florida Gators, retweeting that we have benched DJ Lagway. And I said, oh, I can't get any worse than that. And then we reminded ourselves that we will be driving 20 hours this upcoming week to watch this team in the state of Mississippi. Dev, what are your thoughts on Saturday night's showing and the embarrassment we witness on national television?
At least our pets' heads aren't falling off. I had 20-year-old movie references from Dumb and Dumber. Yeah, embarrassing, humiliating, any word you want to use to describe whatever that was. Quit, I guess, is the best word to use. First 30-point loss to Kentucky since Bear Bryant was gracing their sidelines. Thank God that this era of Gator football is 4 weeks away from being over. There's not really much to belabor other than we're almost to the end. There's going to be plenty more rumors and twists and turns, I'm sure, over the next month when it comes to the coaching search. But as far as the product on the field, we're pretty close to not having to watch this kind of football anymore, hopefully. So,
yeah. Kentucky's first 30-point conference win since 1998 when they beat Vanderbilt.
Wow. So, I mean, it's hopefully you make the right hire this coming up time and we're done and putting this era behind us. But, feels like rock bottom. I know that you got to knock on wood when you say something like that because things can always get worse. But a 30-point loss to I think the statistically the only offense in the SEC that was worse than Billy's, hanging 38 points on your defense. It was ugly, rough, terrible, no good, very bad. So – we're on to Oxford, and we're coming back with their coach.
Yeah, Jake, you'll be in Oxford. You get to watch tonight's game. Where's your enthusiasm level going into Oxford from 1 to 10 now?
I think we'll start.
It's already not pretty low.
We'll always have a good trip, man, get the boys together and stuff. But watching the game, I mean, that was the first time in the Billy era, I think. You could – call the team soft, you know, say a team kind of quit a little bit. I think we were probably expecting a defensive showing like this for a couple months now. Probably since the LSU game, you know, with how bad the offense was early in the year, you're kind of thinking, when is the defense going to kind of throw in the towel? And it was tonight from the jump. I think they scored on their first four possessions, Kentucky did. And then obviously what was going on the offensive side of the ball just compounded things. And it was over before it started. So, I don't know where the team goes from here to kind of finish out the season. But like Devin said, a few weeks left, and we're on to a new era of Gator football.
Well, Sam, that brings up to you. Where do we go from here? Tramell Jones got to start the second half, played the final 30 minutes. Did we see the end of the DJ Lagway era, or do you think he starts come Saturday in Oxford?
I know as a Vikings fan, the soft benching is it's a hot topic. So all my football teams, maybe I'm the problem. But, I don't know, man. That was terrible to watch, and it's all the hype around him. And I forget who it was, but I saw someone tweet that, you know, our best quarterback in the last, you know, 10, 15 years was the least hyped, least recruited guy, Kyle Trask. So it's unfortunate, but hopefully – we can see something in Tramell the last few weeks if we do go with him. But, yeah, just a terrible performance from DJ once again. It doesn't make sense at this point.
Yeah, all around bad. I think he had three first-half interceptions. an underthrown ball to Aiden Mizell, which would have been a touchdown on one of the our earlier drives. I think our only touchdown came off a muff punt in the first quarter, which set us up, I think, at the 12-yard line, and we had to score on third and medium, third and long in that situation as well. So nothing easy. I don't even know what the final box score looks like. I don't know how many total yards we put up. Nothing. I know
not worth looking at.
Yeah. I know Jaden Ball is our leading receiver, which is never never good when your running back is leading the team at five receptions. So, Dev, where do we go from here? What else is there to talk about? We can just shut down this podcast and quit just like the team did tonight. We can just make it easy on ourselves.
Yeah, that would be the easy way out. But we got to get we got to lead from the front. We'll get the Billy Stench off the program one podcast at a time.
Yeah, and we do have a voicemail from someone on our podcast that was in attendance tonight in Lexington.
Well, let's go with that first, and then let's see what he has to say, and then we can go from there.
All right, we got Will from Lexington, John from Lake City, and Paul from Gainesville all on this one call, I believe. So.
Hey guys, this is Will. I'm here with Ashley from Jacksonville, John from Tampa, James from Lake City, and Paul from Gainesville. We decided to walk down to the nearest hospital to catch an Uber back to our hotel, but we think that we might just go ahead and check ourselves in for a psych evaluation after what we just watched. I am pleased to report that there didn't seem to be any friends on the other team, so there was not much smiling going on. Bryce Lovett seemed to be real upset about somebody spitting on him, but hopefully he'll be able to get over it in the locker room. Louisville just lost. We're getting breaking news that Louisville just lost. Jeff Brom, you are off the list. Jed Fish, I cannot believe you embarrassed me like that. What the heck, man? You're also potentially off the list, but hopefully it's just Lane. You guys have to kidnap Lane Kiffin in Oxford. Otherwise, this program may be dead. That was the most embarrassing, just pathetic loss I've ever seen. Zero fight. I don't want to hear another word about Lagway. His dad can get out of my mentions. Go Gators. We'll live to fight another day in all kinds of weather. That was the most in all kinds of weather game of all time, sitting there watching that for four quarters. So go Gators always. We'll see what we got in store next week. Bring Lane home. Go Gators.
Man said, you stay out of my mentions this late.
Yeah, he didn't waste any time to throw a selfie jab in there, did he?
Did not. Oh, I'm just – yeah, how about – let's go to Bryce Lovett. We could read his lips talking to Billy G on the sidelines. I got spit on. Well, we spit on a player. Like Dev said, there's seven HD cameras. We get
caught in 4K, and it's a national news story for 2 months with people talking about Spitgate.
Yeah, we don't even see how Bryce Lovett's helmet comes off. We don't see the spit incident. We barely see the pushing and shoving. So
everybody's out to get us, man. Whenever he's forced.
Don't worry. We had our best man on the job. We had Coach Jaluk go over there to calm him down. our one coach on staff known for being level headed in those kind of situations.
Hey, somebody's got to lead from the front. We're such a mess, dude.
This is so bad. We got
coaches calling plays that the last time they got the chance to call plays was at Alabama A&M, where they averaged like 20 points a game. And that's the position that this staff got put in by this head coach that held this program hostage for 4 years. It is so good that he's gone and that we're so close to this being over with. He literally created a staff so bad that the offensive coordinator still didn't get promoted after the head coach got fired. That was the play caller. We have a play calling off the field analyst right now sitting up in the booth with your non-play calling offensive coordinator while your wide receiver coach is the head coach. It's just it was such a poorly constructed staff. I haven't seen Rob Sale or what's the name of the other offensive line coach now? I haven't seen either of the offensive line coaches anywhere. We've had more offensive linemen spit on other players than we have offensive line coaches. It's a mess of a program. It's a mess of a team. And the only thing that you can be thankful for is that it's almost over. It's just such a humiliating experience these last 4 years. And the only way that it can be made up for is to hire the right guy, hire your guy for this in this search. Otherwise it's, you know, another 4 years, another 3.5 years, whatever it is of a mess, an embarrassment and humiliation that, that this program is going to put us through.
We'll get to the hiring the right guy next, but I was texting someone during the game and saying, you know, the quit, it was inevitable, right? We've been saying for several weeks now, it finally came to fruition. I thought maybe Tennessee in the swamp or Florida State later in the year, once this team kind of gets their teeth kicked in a little bit, but it happened Saturday night in Lexington. And it's the losing culture that Billy Napier created. I would not be mad if all 85 scholarship players did not return next year. I don't care how bad next year is, as long as you just get this losing stench out of Gainesville. And the quitting is just because, like Dev mentioned, the staff. This is the worst resume across the board for the staff members probably that I've ever coached on the sidelines of the University of Florida. So the quitting became much earlier, despite having legacies. Vernell Brown on offense, there's only so much he can do. And then Miles Graham on defense. When you're so depleted like we are, I'm just not shocked by tonight.
To the quit point, it felt like in the previous regimes, like after McElwain got fired. I mean, granted, that whole season when McElwain got fired was a quit, but like the Missouri game after, that was, Rand Shannon, interim coach, and we just got blasted. And then the couple games in the Mullen era toward the end, Missouri, South Carolina, just the quit factor. It just felt like that again. And like you said, got to get the stench out of here, man. And it's been lingering.
I know it became like a joke last week with Will and his Twitter antics, but it really does say something to me about the program when you have players that just are okay with losing. Like that's just like an acceptable option. It literally took 20 years off of Urban Meyer's life whenever he lost a game in Gainesville. And it was something that meant the world to those teams to win. It was a winning culture. There's schools that have winning cultures right now. Georgia has a winning culture. That's how you win games like the Florida-Georgia game last week or the Tennessee game earlier this year or the Auburn game. When you have a winning culture, you win. You find ways to win.
And Indiana today, yesterday, for example.
Indiana. That it's a perfect example of teams that develop a winning culture that refuse to lose, and then teams that become so used to losing, and it becomes an acceptable option. That's the most dangerous spot for a program to be in. And rooting that out of the program is going to require so much turnover. I'm so tired of hearing about the talent on this team. I'm so tired of hearing about how they played hard for Billy Napier. I'm so tired of hearing about how, competitive nature that they had that Billy loved to talk about, that they have competitive maturity or whatever the silly phrase was that he would use during press conferences. None of that matters. Have a team that cares about winning. And I think today was the emblematic of, well, things didn't go our way last week. We have an interim coach. It's November, ready to pack it up, looking for our next stop. If you're Tank Hawkins, like it's a program that's just, it's broken. And, you know, you hate giving those kind of, you know, broad sweeping statements. But when you're going through a coaching search, that's why you're going through the coaching search, is because the program's in a broken spot. And I think, you know, when you fire a coach in mid-October, inevitably this is the day that comes. And it's painful in the moment. It's frustrating in the moment. But hopefully it's like a root canal. You have to go through the terrible part, and then you get to the other side, and you know, things get better after that. So it just sucks to be humiliated and embarrassed like that. You get text messages from FSU fans that, you know, their team's 3-5 and getting blown out by double digits, but at least Florida's losing. So that's the kind of stuff that it's just, hard to, you know, have to sit through and listen to. So we're almost to the other side of it, at least. So
yeah, that's the growing pains of firing the coach that early, right? I mean, I think Sam had a good point. The last time the team probably looked that bad, or really, I mean, got boat raced by a team that was just a terrible team. Like, this Kentucky team isn't good. Nobody's sitting here arguing that, like, they played a good game or they have a good roster or nothing. It was that South Carolina game in 21. And right after that game, you know, Ty Grantham gets fired the next day. And I think a week or two later, Dan Mullen got fired. Obviously, firing the coach early this year, and it had to be done. But it just is what it is for the next few weeks. And just my one note on the staff that we're talking about, that just really isn't a great staff. They're not putting the guys in a great position. But we heard for a couple weeks now that we've got the guy calling plays because he's a friendly voice for the quarterbacks and a good voice for the quarterbacks. And six quarters into the experiment, we're benching the quarterback. I mean, that's pretty emblematic of whatever the system and the process is that's going on in that building. Right now, it's broken. And thank God that somebody, you know, gets a chance to fix it here in a few weeks. And hopefully, you know, it's the right guy to where we're not doing it again in a few years.
It's amazing watching the types of throws that DJ was able to make as a true freshman, and just the regression that he made. Like, I owe old Hacker from 1010 an apology. We went back and forth about guys regressing after their freshman year. And, you know, I think that everybody had kind of had the notion that, you know, DJ, you saw the talent in flashes and saw the potential that he had, and to see him just totally look lost. Mental reps are not real, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that replaces actually going out there and doing the work. And I get it that he was hurt, but good grief. It's amazing how much regression that he's had this year. The lack of development, it's astonishing to see. I mean, he might be like one of the worst quarterbacks in the country. And we were talking about the potential to be like on Heisman list. And it wasn't just us. It was like national, like he was top five, top 10 in Heisman odds in Vegas coming into this season. I don't think anybody really saw this level of regression and this bad of coaching. And obviously the injuries in the offseason were worse than what was let on, but I think we're past the point of being able to use the injuries as an excuse, because you're still playing. And yeah, of all the guys on the roster that need a total reset, he might be at the top of the list to go ahead and get whatever surgeries it is he needs to get himself healthy and ready for a quarterback battle next year, or you know, whatever's next in store for him, because it's rough, really, really rough.
He forgot how to read. Go ahead, Sam.
He's terrible against like zone coverage. He doesn't know how to like read defenses anymore. It's beyond. Go ahead, Jax.
Well, just saying, after tonight's three interception performance, DJ Lagway is 486 in the country in interceptions out of 486 qualified quarterbacks. So he's got the most interceptions in the country, without the other data being inputted from today, according to ESPN. But that is where we currently stand with our five-star quarterback, who's making probably $2 million a year from Florida Victorious, along with Red Bull. What did he do, Hollister this week, or American Eagle? Who did he sign up with?
Jumpman, Gatorade.
He was in that commercial with Wall. I mean, Wall's off a national championship. He got a ring on his finger and a first-round pick of the Jazz, and he's doing a commercial with him. And I mean, I know that's like no correlation to like whatever he's doing off the field in NIL, but like you see that in August. We all think like this is a guy that has a chance to be in that like Walter Clayton Jr. breath when he gets done playing at the University of Florida. I mean, it's unfathomable the drop off we've seen this year. And whether it was the injuries and his camp dealing with it in the offseason and how they decided to go about it, or the coaching staff, or whatever it was, all parties involved.
It's a total failure.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if we'll ever know exactly who's the blame on or what exactly they should have done. But I mean, it's safe to say, I mean, they botched it. I mean, whatever they did to this kid's development, and he deserves some blame too. But the regression is staggering.
I will say that this kid did pretty well his entire life until this staff got their hands on him. He did good enough to become the number one overall player in the country, the Gatorade National Player of the Year, all of these accomplishments. And then this staff got a hold of him for 18 months. I don't know how they decided to handle the injury in the offseason and whether to or not to get the surgeries or whatever. However, they ended up handling it once, you know, his true freshman season was over with. But he was able to figure it out for a while there and get to the status that he was. And then the staff got a hold of him for, you know, a year and a half. And this is what they've turned him into. So I think, like you said, all parties are to blame. But this staff, let's just say, I think it's going to be in his best interest, too, for the staff to be gone.
Yeah, 100% agree. We've got a special appearance.
From Lexington.
From Lexington. How you feeling, Will? How was the psych evaluation at the Lexington Hospital?
Oh, no. Is he frozen already?
Yeah, frozen.
That was still nice.
That was like the Stone Cold music.
Yeah, he came crashing through.
Came in hot. Just get the Wi-Fi turned on next time.
Yeah, I was really hoping to hear some more analysis on his Jed Fish take and their embarrassing 13-10 loss today on the road at Wisconsin. I think, did Wisconsin have positive passing yards in that game, Dev? I know you were monitoring that situation up in
The last I saw, their starting quarterback was 3 of 11 for 8 yards. I think their punter led the team in passing. We got an update from Will that said his Wi-Fi is as crappy as DJ Lagway. So we may not be getting a Will appearance. But, yeah, it was a tough day for all of the list outside of Lane. From Oxford. Hey,
I pulled up the stats from Wisconsin. They had four different players throw a pass today, and they combined for a total of 6 of 18, 48 yards, and an average of 2.7 yards a completion. And they beat Washington at home. Woof.
Oh, here we go. We got
it's not so hard to win.
What's going on, Will?
Back here at the hotel. Glad you made it there safe. We were just going over Washington's quarterback stats.
Oh, I thought I had called in after that. I'm not prepared. I'm not in a good headspace to talk about Jed Fish right now.
I think we're not in
the Gators either.
Yeah. We're not in a good headspace to talk about any of the coaching candidates outside of hopefully the top one. And hopefully we don't have to get past that guy because the
luckily it's a good sign. He knows Lagway got benched, so like he knows that, you know, the quarterback competition is open, right?
Hey, yeah, maybe he's just hype about the chance to coach Tramell Jones. He's glad his next quarterback's getting some reps right now, you know?
Yeah. I kinda regret calling for Tramell Jones because he kinda stunk too. But not much you could do out there.
I mean, it's not really his fault. That offensive line was so disinterested from the get-go. Dev and I made a comment in our group chat during the game. No one was awake or focused. But take us through your lens, Will. Take us through your day, Lexington.
Lexington.
You got a pretty harsh tweet giving it a D-plus as a town.
Yeah, Lexington stinks. You go for the Bourbon Trail, and the Bourbon Trail is fun, but it's like kind of in Frankfort and on the trail. Like you go through the hills and everything, and you run a bus, and that's fun. But the town of Lexington, nobody even knew the Gators were playing when you told them, or that Kentucky was playing. When you told them that Florida and Kentucky were playing, they would ask you if it was basketball. And they would be like, this seems odd for them to be playing this early in the calendar. It's like, no, it's still football season. Florida and Kentucky are going to play a football game. And they're like, oh, well, y'all are gonna crush us. You know, we're terrible. Stoops got to get fired. And we kind of would roll our eyes because I think they just thought that Florida, naturally being Florida, was a good football team. And so we, you know, we went down to the distillery district, got to hang out, do some duck bin bowling. That was like the most fun part of the day by far. Played some ping pong. That went well. And then we end up going, we went to Tin Roof before the game. And I mean, it was terrible. There was like nobody tailgating, nobody doing anything. It was pretty cold. We had to walk like a mile and a half into the stadium. And then, I mean, from the opening kick, we just got our butts kicked. And you know, we're sitting there amongst a lot of the family. So I kind of had to be on my best behavior. I didn't want to piss off any parents anymore. And, you know, thank goodness that we got that 6-star punter with snagging it, because otherwise they might have shut us out. But we looked really good coming out. Yeah, it was a sweet play. Yeah. It looked really good. We looked great coming out of the tunnel in the orange, white orange. We looked good. Billy G's sweatshirt looked great. And then the game started getting played, and that was about all that. Yeah. Then I kind of just sat there and I was actually smiling, laughing. I must admit I was laughing during this loss because every play just made it get worse and worse. And, you know, you just, this lady next to me is screaming. She's like, I bet they're going to give it to Seth McGowan. And it was kind of a sick joke, 'cause like they literally just handed it to him every play and he ran it right down our throats. And, she was making it easy, like, you know, sound like it should have been easy to stop him. But, all in all, Lexington D+, terrible place, never need to come back except maybe to see the Gators dunk on them. We're officially moving on to basketball season.
You know, it was a bad day.
Questions from the floor.
You know, it was a bad day when the highlights that Will points out is that he played some ping pong. He actually liked the interim coach's sweatshirt. We high pointed a muff punt, and you know, we're in hell, guys. We put in the backup quarterback, and his first read was Hayden Hansen. We just
I think it was DJ's second or third, the long one. There, we were sitting kind of. We had a great angle. The second he let this thing go, I was like, "Where the heck is he throwing that?" And I thought he was going to outthrow the defensive back for a second, but that guy caught it. And then it was the saddest attempt by a football team to chase him down. And so let me just take back everything I'd said about Miles Graham not letting him quit and all that stuff. Throw that out the window. They quit.
Hey, yeah, well, you'd probably appreciate this. You didn't get to hear the broadcast. Jordan Rogers was like as hard as I've ever heard, like a color analyst on a quarterback on that throw. And just made the comment something to the effect of every high school quarterback learns not to make that throw on cover two, like the first day as a high school quarterback. But he like didn't hold back. He was after that third pick, yeah. Jordan Rogers was kind of going in on how bad he was playing.
Yeah. But Jordan Rogers, I will give credit. Finally, a national media member was talking about the head coaching job at Florida in the opening we currently have. And I forgot who they were talking about, but he brought up that, every coach in the country will be answering their phones when Florida comes calling. It's that high level of a job. So thank you, Jordan Rogers, for at least mentioning, you know, Florida is still a premier program. We are in the dumps right now. But it was refreshing to hear that on an ESPN broadcast for the first time since we fired Billy.
For sure. And I think that, you know, one of the things that you kind of read the discourse and the Ole Miss fans on message boards and on Twitter and everything. And they love doing the, I'm watching LSU and Florida play right now. And they're just not even close to the same program that Ole Miss is. That's literally the point, guys. We're not going to hire your coach because we're a good football team right now. We're going to hire your coach precisely because we're not a good football team right now. It's not more of a reason for Florida not to hire Lane Kiffin, or more of a reason for Lane Kiffin not to go to Florida, that Ole Miss is better right now. That's kind of the whole point for why you go and you take a coach that's overachieving at a school like Ole Miss. So it's just everything's frustrating, man. It's exhausting to get humiliated as often as we've gotten humiliated these last 4 years. So, to be honest with you, I just kind of want to zap to Thanksgiving and get these next 4 weeks of silliness and wasted time out of the way and just get done with this coaching search or get to where we're actually hearing real things on this coaching search. Because I have a feeling that this week there's going to be a lot of reading into tweets and reading into press conference comments and things that don't matter in the grand scheme that's going to drive Florida and Ole Miss fans absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, and we'll get into that once I know Will's got limited time as he is in a hotel in Lexington. But real quick, Will, how many Denzel Aberdeen jokes did you throw out throughout your trip in Lexington, and did the Gators sing the alma mater tonight?
I threw out zero Denzel Aberdeen jokes. I'm trying to erase him and this game from my memory. No, I was singing the alma mater with Paul from Gainesville and John from Tampa and Ashley from Jacksonville and James from Lake City. And the band was there to play it with us, but there were no members of the Sun Belt staff, no members of the players. But they needed to get in the locker room as quickly as possible. It was terrible. It was bad.
Plenty of bourbon to forget about this game, at least.
Hey, yeah. Has LaFrance tweeted lately? Or is that
shut? No. Well, his burner may have.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah,
I was just curious.
Unsure about him. But, you know, he needs to go post on LinkedIn, not Twitter. So,
any references to the basketball national championship?
There were a lot of Kentucky fans waving goodbye, and every single Florida fan was just like, don't forget about that national championship. And we know that cuts them to the core. So
that's a good dig with them, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to think of something different in Oxford. That won't hit the same in Oxford next week, Devin.
I think I can come up with a few things for those people.
Can we just beat them in golf a few weeks ago?
We did. Yeah, sure did.
We've pretty much beat them like throughout American history, so we'll have a good time with the Ole Miss people.
All right, see you, Will. Thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on, Will.
Safe travels.
Thanks for your service, Will.
Go Gators.
All right, well, that was nice to get 5-8 minutes with Will, who's on the scene, and fitting that he was in Kroger Field tonight, where that will probably be where most of our coaching staff ends up being employed after this season. It was who was it on our staff? John Hevesy that went and worked at Lowe's after he got fired. So pretty fitting our coaching staff put on an audition tonight for the Kroger employment team. Because that's just well, I'm glad those guys, all the folks that he mentioned from Jacksonville, Lake City, Gainesville, and Tampa, all stuck around for the alma mater, but our players and coaches did not have the audacity to stand out there with the fans in the cold despite them. Yeah, singing for the patch. They spent their hard-earned money and time to go to Lexington, and you know they had the ability to stay. But let's go into coaching search. I saw a lot. I don't know if you guys were on the timeline during the game. It was a disaster. I mean, people are just losing their minds. Certainly, we knew we're in this position for a reason. We're a horrible program at this moment. We're a horrible team. But for some reason, fans like to think that tonight's result changes the likelihood of us landing Lane Kiffin, which I think is just stupid. I think this is maybe even motivates him a little bit more. He knows the history of Florida. Him and his ex-wife, who's now back together, had their first date in Gainesville. He played in the Swamp when we were undefeated 12-0 in 2009. Just what are your thoughts and the level of interest in this job, despite us probably going to get embarrassed again the next 3 weeks on national television?
I don't think that it has anything to do with the decision he ultimately makes. I think that if Florida Kentucky had any impact on whether or not he takes the Florida job in a month, then he would have already signed the extension that's been sitting on his desk since October the 1st. And I think that there's stuff that matters in the coaching search, and there's stuff that doesn't matter. I don't think that losing in embarrassing fashion with an interim coach is going to have any impact whatsoever on the coaching search, on the future of the program. it may impact who gets to stay on the roster once the new coach is hired, which, you know, by all means, I think at this point I'm good on about 99% of this roster, whether they stay or go. So I think that people get, you know, fans get emotional after losses. We all get frustrated. We're all embarrassed. We're all ticked off. But it, big picture wise, I don't think that this changes anything. It's a matter of Lane's going to have an offer from Florida. He's going to have an offer from Ole Miss. He's probably going to have an offer from LSU and Penn State and, you know, every other major job out there. And he's going to have a choice. And right now it sounds like from the Ole Miss side and the Florida side that choice is ultimately going to come down to Florida or Ole Miss. And, you know, we all, you know, hear things. We all think that choice is ultimately going to be Florida. So we'll see. There's a long way to go. Time kills deals. We all know that. We'll see. And we'll find out, you know, after the Florida State game, after the Egg Bowl. So we can guess, we can say all this and that. I don't think that tonight, I don't think next week, I don't think any comments made this week, I don't think anything that happens between Florida and Tennessee or Florida and Florida State will have anything to do with Lane Kiffin ultimately choosing to or choosing not to coach Florida next year.
Agree. Well, let's move on to, before we wrap up, a little bit more positive talk, Gator basketball. If you guys want to jump into that, unless you got anything further to say regarding the state of the program. I think we're good there. Gators bounce back, come home for the first time, unveil the 2025 national championship banner. Really cool. Lovelace, I know you were there. I was there as well. 104-64 victory over UNF, kind of victory you expect. Good to see some fight from our guys and come out the way we did after a tough opening loss to Arizona. Lovelace, what were your thoughts or standouts that you saw Tuesday? I guess it was Tuesday night in the O-Dome? Thursday night in the O-Dome, sorry.
Just watching the first two games, I think the fit on the roster is going to be interesting with the guards and what they can work out. And I think that's what everybody's talking about so far through two games. But the talents, I mean, there's no question. There's a ton of talent on the roster. Everybody has belief in this coaching staff after watching them go win a national championship. So by, you know, January, February, March, you know, I think the backcourt should be pretty cohesive with the front court that has so much experience. The biggest glaring thing is they just haven't shot the ball well. You know, the first game against Arizona, they're playing a team that by all means looks like a team that could go into the second weekend or further in the NCAA tournament. I think that game they shot like 27% from three and still had a chance at the end. Didn't shoot the three at all against UNF. I mean, they're averaging 90 points a game, shooting well under 30% from three. So, I want to see them shoot the ball better, but that's the kind of thing that comes with time. And, yeah, they're going to be a good team.
Yeah, Emily texted me from the other room. My thoughts, we can't shoot a three, which I think that's everyone's consensus right now. But even last year, we started 12 of 50 from beyond the arc with Walter Clayton, Elijah Martin, Will Richard on the team. I think that's like 28% or something abysmal as well. So it's nothing to be concerned, Jake. I agree. It's basketball, brand new backcourt. It's going to take some time. Got a good test Tuesday against Florida State. But I thought C.J. Ingram looked really well. It was nice seeing Alex Lloyd get some burn in the first half. I'm glad he wasn't thrown in there while we're up 30 in the second half. But some young stars that I believe are going to be pretty pivotal in our rotation come February, March. Dev or Sam, I know that game was on ESPN+. You guys have the opportunity to watch?
I just saw most of the highlights and then kind of did some box score searching. Looks like Condon kind of got his swagger back, obviously UNF, but need the front court to lead us this year. And, you know, the new guards in the backcourt will fall into place. We'll find an identity. The three-point shooting, would agree with, you know, Emily from Jacksonville as well. You know, we gotta start hitting some shots, but that's going to happen. You know, we've hammered it, you know, we beat it with the broken drum or whatever that phrase is, but we were so spoiled with the shooting that we got last year. It's going to be impossible to any form of replicating that. So, you know, even if, and great point that you made, Lovey, you know, we are still scoring 90 points, shooting less than 30%. We still had a chance to beat Arizona with, you know, an abysmal shooting performance. So it'll come in time, you know, they'll start making some more shots, hopefully. And like you mentioned, Jackson, you'll see in the freshman guys come in, get some burn, you know, expand the rotation a little bit. But yeah, just excited to kind of see this team mold into what the identity will be, because I still think we don't quite know yet.
Yeah, the ceiling's super high. I think that especially the Arizona game, you see the high school tape of this, you know, five-star freshman, and don't really know how that'll translate to the collegiate level. You don't really know how Arizona's going to use him, and then he comes out and he's phenomenal.
That guy's a lottery pick yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a guy that, you know, if we would have played that game in December and kind of know what you're dealing with, you know, you can get your front court prepared, you can game plan better. I think that was one of the things that, you know, our staff was so great at last year, was always having a good scout. And I think when you have a true freshman that comes in and makes an immediate impact like that, it's hard to scout for that in a season opener. You keep getting open shots. Our front court, you know, I think at one point, I don't know what the final number was, but at one point when I checked the box score, we were out rebounding UNF 46-16, which is what we expected from our front court this season. So you keep getting those guys open looks, you keep getting offensive rebounds, eventually the shots are going to start falling. I think that it's encouraging that we scored 104 points in a game where we were shooting like 13% from three. So I think that once those shots start falling, this team is going to be really, really good. Eventually they're going to start falling. Boogie Flan's talented, Xavier Lee's talented. I worry more than the shooting, which I think they'll get hot. This will all average itself out. I worry more about the physicality in the backcourt. Like, I think Boogie Flan's a good defender. But I saw Xavier Lee get kind of tossed around a little bit at times, especially against Arizona. That's something that I'm looking out for going forward, to see how they adjust during the non-conference schedule to the physicality, specifically him as a starting guard, as we get into SEC play, wanting to see those guys be able to be physical, to take contact. You know, there's so many examples of Walt last year fighting through contact, getting the and ones on drives to the basket. So Xavier Lee figuring that out at this level, I think, is something to watch. And it's a rivalry game on Tuesday, must win, especially at home. So want to come out, blow the doors off FSU, and get a good quality quad two, probably win on the resume early.
Yeah, well, one good note about Boogie: 29 minutes per game he's averaging through two games, zero turnovers. So at least he's protecting the basketball while not necessarily shooting it too well. I think he's got six assists in those two games as well. So, but I think Todd's got a little problem, maybe coming minutes wise. Micah Hanlockton, I mean, good Lord, he is. I think he's a little bit in weight. He's a little bit heavier than he was last year, but I think that's all muscle. He's certainly slimmed down, it feels like, and he's
moving. He looks like he's in much better shape.
Yeah. I think it's just all muscle he's putting on.
Which is to be expected too, off the injury. That's not like a knock.
Yeah, it's not a knock at all. I mean, the guy broke his leg and he was sidelined. You're not working out, you know, the way you need to. So kudos to him for, in the offseason, his first full offseason in 2 years, getting back into game shape. I think he had 17-13 off the bench against North Florida, a double-double against Arizona. And with Chinleyu not finding his – I don't know if he's ever had rhythm per se, but finding his groove and his identity in the game right now, maybe gets that starting five spot, or I kind of like him being that spark off the bench as well.
I was going to say that I'm kind of surprised Chinyelu really got better as last season went on. I've been kind of surprised at his start to the season. Obviously, there's a long way to go, and he'll find his rhythm again. But coming into the season, I was expecting, you know, him to really hit the ground running and be a guy that we saw noticeable improvement from last year to this year, just because I thought that he got better and better as last season went on. So interested to see him bounce back, and hope to see him bounce back and kind of relax a little bit. Like, he kind of gets the ball and freaks out. So I think that that's something to look out for. Let's see Ruben just relax a little bit when he gets the ball in his hands and not not wildly try to back down the defender and throw the ball at the backboard.
To your point, like it could be more beneficial though for him to kind of be the sixth man to kind of come in to provide some scoring, which he's shown that he can through two games. Whereas you're not really counting on Chin to do that when if he were to be the one coming off the bench. So I think that could have a little intrigue. And then, you know, obviously it's Chin starting, playing, you know, maybe the first couple of minutes and getting Mike in maybe quicker than you would a normal six man. But I think he has more of an offensive upside that it can allow you to, I just think it works maybe a little bit better.
To Jake's point earlier too, about the roster construction, when you're playing Ruben this year and you're not expecting him to score, it's tough when your guards haven't really scored either yet. So then all of a sudden that's three guys on the court that haven't been reliable scorers, and you're looking to Tommy and to Condon to kind of carry the load. And then you get in the situation like Arizona, where if Condon's having an off night, then you're going to have 30 from Hauk, and then one of the guards or somebody else has to step up to be the leading scorer with them. And we got to figure out who those guys are going to be. It's early, and you know, we challenged ourselves in the non-conference, so they got some time to figure out who those other scorers are going to be. But when you put Ruben out there without reliable scoring guards, it puts yourself in a little bit of a predicament. And we say that while we're averaging like 90 points a game through two games. So it's rich people problems, but a problem nonetheless.
I feel like we got to talk about just Tommy for a second. I think most people probably close to the program, like if you listen, obviously Neil Blackman and Eric Fawcett do a great job on Florida basketball, and the people that really cover the team locally, I think really didn't envision that move to the three being any kind of issue. But nationally, you listen to guys like Jeff Goodman and different people nationally. And I think rightfully so. I mean, that was probably one of the biggest question marks on the team. Just how he would, what would the spacing be like? How would he defend, you know, a smaller guy, all those kinds of things. By all accounts, through two games, I mean, he's the best player on the team, even with that move. You know, Neil talks about the NBA scouts like him as a three. Dude, he looks every part of it. Early on in the season, it looks like he's going to make himself a lot of money this year.
Yeah, you do miss that additional perimeter shooter. I think we've seen him be a little bit more aggressive through these two games, shooting the outside shot. But you do miss that ability, the scoring ability from a third guard on the court, and kind of spreading out and allowing that front court to be a little bit more aggressive attacking the offensive glass to create those second and third opportunities. But yeah, we'll be fine. I think the only disappointing result on Thursday, our boy Ollie finally gets minutes, final 2 minutes and 9 seconds, the loudest it was in the O-Dome all night. Jake, I don't know, did you stay the entirety of the game? Yeah.
No, we were there. We were there.
Yeah, didn't get a touch. I don't know how you don't get a guy at 7'9", a touch. And I think we had like five possessions in that 2 minutes as well.
He's got to move around a little bit. Got to move the big feet.
He did.
He was standing right next to a guy in UNF that's listed at 6'8". And by all accounts, on a good day, I'm 5'9". And he made that 6'8" guy look like me on the court. I mean, it was unreal.
I've never seen anything like that. When he checked in for Micah, you know, Micah's 7'1". And he went for a high five and he's looking up, you know, another 8 inches. It's just incredible to see.
Yeah, we couldn't get that guy a touch, man. What was that?
One touch. We do play. I think we got Merrimack, Dartmouth, and I think Colgate. A few games we should be up 30 at that moment in the game. And maybe
put him in the paint, lob it up to him, see if he can tip it in or something. We got to get that guy a basket.
Probably confusing him with the basket. Just hang right next to it.
Yeah. Hey, it'd be nice if we're blowing out FSU bad enough to get him in the game.
Yeah, we'll see. That would be a nice icing on the cake if we get Big Ollie up 20 late against Florida State. But yeah, we got to record at least one stat to get him into the record book at some capacity at Florida.
Right. I was begging for him to foul somebody just to get,
just get in.
Get him into the club trillion.
Dude, exactly.
All right, guys. Any other thoughts? We've got hopefully some pretty big guests on Breakfast Bites this week. Got a few DMs to get back with, and hopefully we got some unique perspectives come on the show I believe it's going to be a Thursday drop, a Wednesday night show. Dev, you're available, right? I know you're driving to Biloxi on Wednesday.
Should be. We're planning on getting into Biloxi around lunchtime. So
perfect. Yeah.
That night, we'll be good to go for a Wednesday night recording.
Yeah, but hopefully what we've got lined up so far comes to fruition. So you guys will be excited. But thank you again for joining. Follow us on Twitter, BreakfastWTG. Make sure you like, subscribe to our YouTube page as well, and Spotify, Apple Podcast. And thanks again for joining us. And go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.